Not Thursday, January 31st. What is today? 6th?
The 5th.
5th.
Okay, no executive session. Okay.
No executive session.
Right.
Today is Tuesday, February 5th, 2019. And no executive session. We're going to start with issues, right?
Yep.
So, communications?
Oh, I testified yesterday on our House Bill 2228, which is the Association of Oregon Counties bill that basically is asking for a regional solutions person embedded that specifically deals with housing actually in every region of the state. What we're finding out is that the smaller counties and cities actually don't even have the capacity to apply for dollars and grants. It was well received. It was an Alyssa Kenny Geyer's group, and we have Mark Meek on there, Tanya Sanchez. I think Alyssa, she helped sponsor the bill, so it actually may have legs, and it was a result of our housing, ad hoc housing committee that we had at the association. So it'll help all the counties, but we're seen as a leader in that, so that was pretty cool. There was some interest because of the manufacturing center that Clackamas Community College has built. They're having a tour of OMIC. I can't go on this, and Emily, but OIT and the OMIC folks are going to go take a look at the facilities. So we may very well become a workforce hub for manufacturing based on the Sheffield model. I talked to Betsy Johnson really quickly the other day. She's enthusiastic about it because we're actually ready to go. So we actually will bring Sheffield, I think, to the county. So that's something exciting. I did want to give Ken an update on housing. The Tallwood Institute was at our meeting the other day. What that was about, and this was my friend Leanne, who's like CLT. No, but actually,
how was she?
Good, and they actually said really good things about Clackamas County, that we are like the county leaders in this. And I guess we're building, was we building like a bathroom of cross-laminated timber, a restaurant or something?
It's a restroom out of, but it's going to be out of mass plywood.
Right. So we're kind of the innovating county with that. And what we were talking about is, we had the governor's office on the phone. What we were talking about is, well, can we use these products for affordable housing? And they kept saying, oh, they're too expensive. And we kept saying, well, no, not really. We need a white paper. So Tallwood's going to look at a white paper to take a look at the expense, because what happens is maybe the product's slightly more expensive, but the labor and the timing of how quickly, and they're not so for them to write it off, they're not really doing a total 360 in terms of what the cost, you know, what the cost savings actually are. Oh, you don't look happy. You have a cold. Okay.
No, I'm not happy. I almost saw somebody die.
No. What?
Off a cliff.
Yes. What? Sliding into a cliff.
Well, I think we better let you do community.
I just saw that. I mean, it's just upsetting.
Yeah. Look how slick it is out there.
Oh, well, it was slick coming up the road, this road here. Well,
yeah.
I didn't think 43 was bad.
Yeah, you had to go up on the curb.
Well, it's a sheet of ice.
43? What? Yeah. No,
No, it was up South End, but it was the car almost bit it completely over the cliff there.
Oh, God.
I took a picture of it, gave it to Laurel, since she rules the world.
I saw it. It does not look...
So anyway, that's all I have. Yeah.
Ken?
Probably have more, but yours is
well,
more.
Let's see.
Scary sauce.
As you know, because we went together at town hall. Small town hall in Escada regarding the BRF. I've spent a lot of time online, back and forth with people explaining the BRF, what it's about, what it will apply to. Basically, also refuting rumors, you know, the money will be used for PERS, and, you know, silly stuff like that that people just don't understand. And it seems to have, in a lot of the cases, maybe not all the cases, but in a lot of cases, you get what I call reluctant acceptance. In other words, you don't expect people to be enthusiastic about you taking money out of their pockets, but if you get reluctant acceptance because they recognize the necessity and they've accepted what you've said about that necessity, I think that's the best you can expect, and seem to have moved a lot of people that direction. I think we'll have some support on Thursday. So. but we'll probably also hear from some people who, no matter what, don't want to pay. But that's been a lot of my focus over the last few days. So
I have a question with that. Okay, so let's say we vote for this. And we're pretty 99% sure it's going to get referred. Because I think it will, one way or the other.
I've heard zero. I've heard nobody say that they were going to do that.
Well, Julie Parrish put it on her webpage. Yeah. And she's got a machine going, so
absolutely.
Just to let you know. But
I had lunch with Les Poole.
Pardon me?
I had lunch with Les Poole, gave the information, and asked that he consider not supporting putting it on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't ask him. I mean, I didn't wait for an answer. I just gave the information.
Okay.
Ken and I, just to follow through, I also sat down with CECOM. That's the next thing on there. So that's CECOM. And one thing I think is that the BCC could be a little more closely aligned with CECOM. You know, that tragedy that took place, the deaths was all live on CECOM, so
murders.
There was a lot of trauma. And
was that the one out in Woodford? Well, it was really in Canby, wasn't it?
Outside of Canby.
Outside of Canby, they said it was.
But, you know, I think that we should take a greater role in supporting CECOM. I think the new director is amazing. I've never sat down in an hour and learned so much in my life. He's amazing.
Paul?
Yeah, I talked to, well, I'll just tell you things that are kind of significant that we all should know. So last evening or early late afternoon, I spoke with Ryan Winshimer at ODOT, head of ODOT for Region 1, and talked to him about the project of Phase 2, and apparently they have done some work, preliminary work. And so he's going to connect with us so we can get educated, maybe meet down there, or then meet here and go over what they have put together for that area. And we talked yesterday, Jim and I and staff. And so I sent Gary and Dan and Jim late last night and this morning what Happy Valley has on their website currently, and it's called the Pleasant. And you also should memorize these words because it really need to advertise this on housing and economic development, more on the housing side. But our opportunity for thousands of acres, by the way, at least a couple thousand acres at the very minimum, the Pleasant Valley North Carver Comprehensive Plan, which will be completed next year. It'll be finished. And that is an opportunity for a significant amount of housing. And the key word we're using that we're agreeing on is mixed-use housing, or mixed-income housing. So it'll be a mixture of all kinds of housing, and that is our silver bullet when it comes to where we're going to place new housing and where we have affordability, I think is our best shot. Something that we have more than any county in the region, and we need to emphasize this to all the leaders, we have more land as a result of this available than anywhere else in the three regions combined.
Within our UGB.
Within the UGB. All in the UGB.
Yep.
Yeah. This is all within the UGB.
That's where I used to live, Pleasant Valley.
We better be aware that if we... I would assume, I guess maybe I'll back up and say this, I would assume that they're looking at the transportation impacts of that.
Well, of course they are. And that's why I brought it up. That's why I brought it up with ODOT. That was my segue.
Okay.
So they are totally involved. I've talked to the mayor.
4,000 acres out there, right?
Well, the part that they're working on, I believe, is, it's not on the website how many acres it is, but it's 2,700, I believe, is in this swath, and plus the swath that is currently between 172nd and 122nd.
190.
No. Talk about from 122nd. That we don't have the acreage yet. I'm waiting for... Laura Zettner's shop.
Oh, you got an email this morning. It came in this morning.
Oh, did it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can you interpret what on the ground mixed income housing means?
All ranges.
I don't mean what it means by price. I mean, what does it mean in housing types?
Everything.
Oh,
yeah, so I could give you an example of what it could mean. So say a developer's putting together a apartment complex, so there would be some at market rate and then some at subsidized lower rates.
And could be cottages and stuff like that.
Yeah, but some at lower price and then some at higher at market rates.
Dan, could you forward that to me?
I'm going to bring it up here right now.
Or different types of housing too, like Paul was saying. So you could have flats. You could have duplexes or triplexes. Where there's single family, so that you have more. Those would be less costly than the other ones.
Okay. And what we're thinking about, I wonder.
So the other one is entry level housing for ownership, mm-hmm. Homeownership. Homeownership is huge. If you want people to enjoy. Or have an opportunity to prosper or to be self-sufficient, there's nothing mm-hmm. better than home ownership.
Yep.
And I think our lower income families, new families, need to have that opportunity, especially if they have kids.
Sonny?
I was in Miami for the American Association of Justice Conference in my role as president of the trial lawyers, and I literally spent 2 days being Senator Merkley's Sherpa at this conference, and along with Tom Diamore, and it was an amazing experience. That's all I have to say.
He was there, and you were carrying his issues?
Walking him around.
Oh.
Taking care of him.
Yay.
Very cool.
Yeah. It was very cool. So whenever you want to hear the insides of what's going on in Washington, I'm happy to share.
So, also I wanted to add that Ken and I are going up to government camp, I believe, Saturday or Friday.
Actually, and, I've got that down, too.
They have an issue with the fire district is why they're asking me up there. The problem really isn't the fire district. Because of the Paradise Fire, communities that are in the forests are having a huge insurance increase, mm-hmm. which is typical when there's a disaster like that, that everybody is impacted for a while. So they have their rates are all going up, and the federal government is doing an analysis, or the insurance companies are doing an analysis of risk, and but that takes time. And so
they'll probably be bumped up to a 10 like I was where I used to live.
Because
you live in an area that's, especially in Southern California brush country, and that's where the Santa Ana winds blow and you get the big fires. That's what we had until, I was telling Jim, we put in a second well, a swimming pool, and a 10,000 gallon storage tank that the fire department could hook up to. And that got our rates down a little bit. But
The reason I called the chief of the fire district, and he told me that's what their issue was. So we're somewhat prepared. He's offered to go up if they would like him to. Let me see. One thing, Gary, and I don't know if we talked about this, and issues for the legislature is the rural housing thing. And I don't know if we're looking at that yet or not, but like I was telling somebody, maybe Paul, this morning, that I can drive up my road and see a dozen houses sitting there vacant in front of the new house. And are we looking at, can we utilize those homes?
Are you talking about ADUs on rural residential?
No, I'm talking about in rural residential where you have to rebuild a new home, you got to tear down the other one. And we have vacant homes all over the place that are sitting there that could be used. And are we looking at that?
So to build on that, build on Jim's point, since I've been here as commissioner 8 years, I don't know how many, quite a few people that got a code enforcement complaint on that they had a second dwelling unit. Mm-hmm. You know, essentially it is an ADU, but really it was a second dwelling on EFU, which is not allowed under state land use law. And one,
because there is a bill, but yeah. It's being fought.
So one person I knew from years ago in my industry, he moved up here, bought a piece of property, coincidentally, in the Eagle Creek area, paid a fortune for it, was taxed on two residences that was on there, bought it because his mother was getting sick, so he bought his mother up here and his family, and unbeknownst to him, someone filed a complaint that he had two dwelling units on there. He didn't build them, he bought it that way. And long story short, after spending a lot of money on attorneys, he was forced to tear it down.
Oh, that just seems like a waste.
I live in him.
And he bought it that way.
RRFF5, rural residential.
Yeah, we're
and it's still true.
Yeah.
So that would take a statute change.
Yeah.
It would.
And that's what the new bill would take care of? That's
AOC? There was a bill floating out there last time.
Yeah, Charlotte, it had something to do with historic houses.
That one went through.
It did, but they limited it to within the UGB.
Well, there was another one that was at the Legislative Committee at AOC.
It was
do you know, Barry, if that one would take care of that situation?
Anyway, I just thought we should.
So Commissioner Mary, your glasses.
Oh, I know, and I can't remember her name. I know. Janet Carlson's bill was the bill we were talking about. We talked about ADUs.
And speaking that right now.
We should really look at it.
Why don't you go to the table and speak to that?
Hey, thank you. Can clear it up and help us, right?
As our new planning director.
Yes. And congratulations, by the way.
Thank
we
you.
Didn't have yeah. the formal celebration of you becoming anointed the new.
Thank you. There is a bill for accessory dwelling units, but it would not apply in EFU. So it's rural residential lands only.
So it's already rural residential, not any farm and forest.
Correct.
Or like,
so two-acre parcels, and it would permit a second dwelling capped at 900 square feet.
Above 2 acres?
At two acres or above. Okay. Correct. Minimum lot size of 2 acres. Maximum size of 900 square feet. But it could be amended. You know, it's in process right now. I think it probably seems like it has some traction, but I imagine there'll be some opposition as well.
From Thousand Friends?
Potentially, yeah. I was in a work session call with them, and they clearly had concerns, but I didn't necessarily hear them say it was an absolute non-starter. But there's a lot of concern about wildfire, though, that's sort of been tied to this bill, and so looks like we would have to do some kind of fire planning if we wanted to do it. It's optional for counties. It's not mandatory.
Right.
So we would have to choose to.
So it's an enabling legislation.
No,
you could.
It could be. I mean, if you had one of those situations where you had replaced a dwelling, you could potentially, and converted it to storage, you could potentially then convert it back, but you'd have that 900 square foot cap on size. So
and
that would be a
how big
factor.
Is like 900? Like, give me just a visual of what that was.
Small.
Not.
So like,
it's like your kitchen and dining. What we had the. You put the table and then maybe one bathroom and maybe a tiny bedroom.
A three-car garage.
So this is like my little thing in the back. Okay.
That is kind of small.
It is small.
Yeah.
Unless you're having dinner at Martha's house.
Yeah.
So what would it take to take care of what Paul just mentioned?
About EFU?
Yeah. So, I mean, so that somebody doesn't have to tear down a property. That just seems crazy.
Well, that's the whole issue I'm talking about.
It really comes down to how much density is going to be permitted in rural areas. And so the state really limits dwellings on EFU and timberland. Mm-hmm. And historically, in rural residential areas as well, one dwelling per lot and minimum lot size is no greater than 2 acres for new lots. So now they're moving toward allowing these accessory dwelling units in those rural residential areas. So it is a softening of the stance on limiting uses in rural areas. But the issue is what happens is people already have their one legal house and they choose to replace it because they want something newer or bigger or different. They, under the zoning, you can't do that. You get one house. And so I think the concern would be if they replace one and then they get to keep it, and then do they get to replace again and keep that one? And pretty soon you've got 3 and 4 and 5 houses on one lot.
Yeah.
Well, and that's sort of the concern. It's how
but
many are appropriate.
Somebody bought a property that had two residences on it and they were taxed for two residences.
What you don't know is
it would have had to be legal. Yeah, that's the question. Were they lawfully established? And
one
sounds
of them
like
might
in this
not
case they weren't.
Established in the first place.
Yeah,
right.
But
and we might not know the details
so
if you're paying property taxes.
My example is I have.
Yeah,
this a kitchen house on my property when they built, it was a kitchen house, still exists, it was built around 1900, and it sits there empty.
Mm-hmm.
It's storage. It used to have a bathroom in the kitchen, and not a bedroom, but it certainly could.
Yeah.
And why should I have to tear that down when there's a shortage of housing?
Right, and why can't you rent it out affordable to somebody?
So the three issues that I think we have to be concerned with in the long run is water and its availability, sewer or septic, and whether you can have, for instance, a well and a septic tank on the same piece of property with two dwelling units is questionable in my mind. Because you could very easily pollute the well with septic tanks. And then transportation. Those are the three key issues. So if we adopt something like this, we're going to have to look at really constructing a set of rules and regulations that address those things. And 2 acres might be just fine or not, depending on location of well and septic tank or source of water. If you've got piped in water, then you don't have a septic tank problem, for instance. Mm-hmm. And then the sizing of the tanks, because you're looking, you know, it used to be, I think, 1,000 gallons for a single family, you know, 3 and 2. I think it's up to 1,500, it may be up to 1,500 gallons now, I'm not sure, or maybe it is still the same size, I'm not sure. But again, now that you're adding 900 square feet and at least potentially 2 more people, what are you going to do on septic tank size? Mm-hmm. So I'm just concerned that we don't just allow... like sort of a haphazard, shoddy bootleg in that doesn't take into consideration those things because they can be problematic.
So, mm-hmm. I loop in Chris Lyons and work with DTD. We'll come back to you if we need to take a different position on the bill.
Okay, priority project update, see attached.
Okay, so there's a fairly lengthy packet. I don't know if folks had a chance to look through it. Mm-hmm. We don't have a ton of time, but if you have questions or do you want me to run through this?
Well, is that the one with the budget?
This is, it starts with budget development. And I'd like Dan to come up, too, because he contributed to this.
Was this part of the memo that Don left as he was exiting out?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think he passed this out.
Because I have looked at this. That's good.
Yeah. So do you want to run quickly through and have me read the titles and see if you have any questions, or do you?
No, I think
the
it's.
Titles are a lot.
I just want to. I just intend to save this because I think.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent
good guide for us going forward.
Guide.
Yeah.
Are you asking if we have any other? I mean, this is it. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, and this is what when we would meet with Don, all of us would sit, and these are the priority projects. Yeah. So this is a little more background. I think Commissioner Savis, you were asking for some more, a little bit more information. So this is a good summary, I think.
This is Don's list, basically.
Yeah, essentially.
There's a few things that are missing on there. Topics, okay. You know, for example, and we talked about on the housing committee, but the next phase of the Veterans Village, for example, is not in there. And there's a few others, but now is not the time. But I think there's some things to add on there. I did read what's there.
Okay.
Don't have any quarrel with that, but there's a couple things that are missing.
Okay.
The Sunrise Initiative should be part of that as well. That's not in there as well.
Housing Affordability and Homelessness Task Force, I think, encompasses, in my mind, I would hope, when those recommendations come on, and then we will evaluate those as a board, and then we're going to make some decisions. And that timeline's coming up pretty quickly. We're going to get those recommendations.
It's like March 13th.
So that is included in my mind.
Well, yeah, it's not explicit other than in budgetary recommendations.
Right.
It does talk about budgetarily that there needs to be a lot for the expansion, and I saw it there.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to save our money for a courthouse.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I want to talk about that after Ken.
So on the Veterans Village, I had a conversation with Emily, and there's Do Good Multnomah's not ready at this stage, staffing-wise, to move up to 30 people. So in just as a casual discussion, the thought was we still can build the units and get them there and then let Do Good Multnomah ramp up both their staffing and the number of people they have there in a gradual way rather than just, boom, 15 more people there because they're not prepared for that. Thought that wasn't a bad approach. It still keeps us on track to get the units built, and then they can ramp up as their capabilities meet the need. So we might look at approaching it that way, so we could still get the units built I still would like to get out there and help build some more.
Well, we're not building the same units, right?
All right, whatever design. I'm not worried about the design, but whatever design it is. But not expecting to throw 15 more people on do-good until they're ready for it.
Right, that's good.
So yeah, I have to add that. Okay. Is that Emily, Martha, myself, and some of our staff, Dan included even, have been talking about that. So we're talking about ramping that up. And in a way that you're really talking about. But there needs to be a budget line for that. And right now we're just trying to make traction on taking care of some of the technicalities.
First page, Veteran Village budget. Anyway, I just want to lay out.
As far as the details, you're right. That's exactly what I'm thinking.
So the only thing that I'd like to add is that we do have to save for a courthouse. Mm-hmm. Frankly, we created the grant committee to avoid this exact thing, everyone coming to us for money. I think we could up the grant committee $50,000, which would make it $400,000, and that's it. Because we've got a lot of people asking us for a lot of money, and I don't. We should discuss Moot.
I've got a list. Moot wants it.
What was Moot?
We have a list.
Museum of the Oregon Territory. They've been wanting us to take it over as a county museum. The Workforce Board wants money because we used to actually have them internally, and now they're realizing that, well, it's kind of hard to do that.
Yeah. Well, we know the list. We got the list.
Yeah.
Do they want to come back?
No, because you really can't.
I don't think we can.
Why couldn't we?
It'd be whether or not the business community, WIOA prescribes. The federal government prescribes who's on that committee, and the majority of the people are business people, with myself or another elected official as the government person. The WIOA dollars, the federal dollars, oftentimes go for displaced workers, barrier workers, mm-hmm. which is what the county did very well, particularly with mm-hmm. the barrier workers. And the business community didn't like that because they felt that their pipeline was being sacrificed solely for everything going towards barriered workers. So it's a schizophrenic model, and it's because the federal government's schizophrenic, in my opinion, with this.
Do other counties run it through their counties?
Yes, normally. They run it through their region, and there's usually one or two commissioners on each workforce.
Okay. I just think if they're having budgetary problems, economies of scale, we provide so much infrastructure as a county that it...
I could certainly mention sending out grants
and the whole procurement process and doing the budgeting and doing the sending out RFPs.
That's the whole piece
is like, why would you ever leave Clackamas County?
Because they weren't being rational.
I know.
And the business community was wrong.
They realize how hard it is, right?
No, they didn't.
They do now.
And they almost failed. But anyway, that's old news. Maybe that's something I could throw at them and say, we'll come back to the county.
If you think it's a good idea, we should talk about it as the representative. You've been at this for years, so.
I have. I'm not sure we want another internal department.
Yeah, I'm not sure we want it either.
And then putting it back into human services would be a nightmare, because they would want total control.
What about economic?
Oh, that's where business. I put it. Business and economic development.
I'm not advocating anything.
Okay.
Just bringing, because I have no idea.
Well,
but they want money. Who else wants money?
So getting back to the, just touch on the Moot thing a little bit, or the historical society effort, and I don't want to reset of everything back up in flames, but just looking at our TDC folks or our thing, and I think under the umbrella of tourism, one way or another, however you want to do it, I really think that as small of an ask as it is, that is not out of line, my personal opinion. Under the current structure for the TDC to, push a few bucks that way.
Not to speak for Don, but Don thinks that they're in huge trouble.
Yeah, they are.
A little bit of money is not a solution.
They've been in trouble.
There's history to that. So, I mean, I think because they're in trouble, because frankly, it is not. Not all things in business, and Jim, you were in business, not all things in business, all activities in business generate income or self-sustaining. There's things called cost of business and activities that you simply know that you need to pay into at a loss for the greater benefit of what you're trying to serve. And I really believe that holistically, under tourism, that people come to town, whether they put a head on a bed or they don't, that, you know, supporting your museums and cultural things like that is important. Not like watersheds. Watersheds don't deliver any income whatsoever, but they're a responsibility to come under the auspices of another department.
So at the risk of...
sorry for setting the flames.
At the risk of straying into areas where there could be a conflict of interest, that Don spent some time with the group, went through the budget.
Which group, please?
With the Moot group.
It
felt that it was in very bad shape. We have had this discussion as long as I've been here about tourism. I think you just need to talk to their board and they will give you the answer. The law is the law. We can't direct them how to spend their money. It's nights in bed.
Heads in bed.
Heads in beds and 50 miles. And that's the law. I mean, we had a lawyer here who explained that to us. So, talk to them.
Well, maybe we just...
Talk to this guy. He can ask easily.
Maybe we go to the voters and make a small ordinance adjustment and not be... And so there's a carve-out, like there was with the Fair Board, and make a small carve-out for that and make it legit. I mean, that's not...
Yeah.
No cost to the taxpayers.
If I may, if there's a tie into tourism, the Tourism Board can do grant monies to these different organizations, but it's got to be tied into tourism. So I'm just now going to begin to start learning all of the ins and outs of the Tourism Board and all of that. I need a little time to get an education, not unlike Fair Board situation. And if there's a way that works for the Fair Board and Moot, I'll come back to this board and ask you to consider what we might do. But give me a little time to get my feet on the ground and get to know how they function. And like I say, I need some education in what they do. So
my concern is in this budget process, I don't think we should throw all these things at it. I think we ought to look at upping the small grants, 50,000. But we cannot possibly find all these.
When children are incarcerated, parents makes money too.
I heard that too.
Yeah, I've got a much longer list on that board. This happens every year, and we thread our way through it, and we will continue to have conversations about it. Money is finite, so it's all about
deep pockets,
setting priorities.
So on this is an idea, maybe, and it just. Run with it later on, and not to belabor the conversation. But if you did make it 400, bump it another 50. Okay, we've got to remember. Last I think it was two cycles ago or one cycle. I don't see Caroline here, but we put limits on that, right? We said we put a parameters on that. They said, okay, we're going to feed people or house people. But if you broaden that so that some of these things become eligible with the 400,000, that's fine. But if we keep those parameters on it, some of the things some of these asks aren't eligible with those parameters. So either
right.
Have a broader policy and divvy the money up accordingly.
You could say 300,000 has got to go through to our equity areas, if you will, that deal with exactly those equity issues that we're concerned with. And then the other 100,000 could be for other things. Yeah. We could do that as a policy decision.
Yeah. Put a formula based on a policy.
Yep.
Okay.
Ken, I think you had something on the list.
Not on this, but on the next issue.
Okay.
So we're just gonna
keep going. Yeah.
Yes.
If you have questions, just let me know. Okay. The next issue is bringing back the courthouse resolution statement. Well, the courthouse resolution, and it was suggested that we, since you had adopted a statement at the last meeting, that we add that to the resolution, and that's in the draft resolution now. It's the first therefore paragraph. And so we just thought that would probably be...
Could you just read that aloud,
yep,
please?
I will.
Here, Paul, I have a copy for you.
I read it earlier, but...
Here you go.
Clackamas County is committed to funding and building a new county courthouse. The county will ask voters if they are willing to fund the courthouse, as well as seek other funding opportunities. If voters are not willing to fund the courthouse, the county may have to make significant cuts to current programs and services in order to fund the courthouse. We will do that if we need to. Clackamas County is committed to funding and building a new county courthouse.
And I would like to ask you to reconsider an additional whereas in this, if you don't mind hearing me out. But I'll preface my remarks with, when we do these resolutions and things, we are, as I know Sonia knows well, we're messaging to different groups of people. And every opportunity that we have to message things that we are working on to keep them front and center in the public's eye, I think we should take advantage of that. So I would like to reconsider the idea of the following whereas. Whereas Clackamas County is committed to applying principled sustainability and livability practices in its construction projects, including, wherever feasible, energy efficiency and LEED standards, use of efficient and durable products such as cross-laminated timber, and consideration of trauma-informed design in public safety projects. I'd like to add that into the whereases. It messages about the cross-laminated timber concept and project that we've been working on. It messages to the construction community. It messages to the sustainability community. And I think that we need to be consistent and take every opportunity to message the things that we're working on and that are priorities.
What's trauma-informed?
And I will defer to Laura on exactly how you would define it.
Trauma-informed design takes into account the people that are coming to a courthouse or into some other public safety facility, and it has to do with acoustics and color and calming types of, you know, plants, maybe green walls, things like that. And there's a body of science on that.
Anybody have a problem with that, Beth?
So my only thought is, if we're going to talk to all our constituencies, we also talked about community benefit agreements. So would somehow need to incorporate
that. It doesn't stop there.
So that's the only challenge. Gary, you want to weigh in on this as a public relations tool?
We're getting into details of the hows.
Right. So the resolution was just ideally meant to say the courthouse, why the courthouse is failing, what the challenges are, it's not seismically safe, and that you're committed to finding funding to build a new one, not going into the details of what will be in it. And we would talk about public safety, the 911, human impacts. There's so much more
domestic
we could add.
Violence,
we're trying to just talk about in this
family justice,
this
family
one message, mm-hmm, through a resolution.
But at the same courthouse time, it has to inform that, you know, our goal is to make it relieve the illness. I don't know.
Well, you also had State Rep Bynum, who was, you know, somewhat strong and someone insisting or suggesting that there be good transportation. There's a number of things. We start doing the house, that we're going to have a very long run.
That's a really good point. I love the statement, though, Ken, I have to say. I think it's very well constructed.
I think I asked Laura to come up with a proper way to phrase it, and I thought she did a good job with it. We have to sell this courthouse project to a whole lot of people. There's a whole lot of different constituencies out there putting things in there, whether it's limited to this or even including more things like transportation or whatever. That doesn't bother me, because we need to be able to convince people to spend 13 cents a thousand if we're going to do this courthouse. I mean, when you really get down to the nitty-gritty of it. And so why do you want to do a courthouse? Well, there's a lot of reasons we want to do a courthouse, and it isn't just because it's next to the river and it's overcrowded. It's a lot more stuff, and there's a lot of reasons why you can get people to buy in if you tap into their issues and agendas. That's what this does. It taps into other constituents out there issues and agendas. That's why I like to
What's happening with the 4-H extension service building that's going to be built? Are they using cross-laminated timber?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What if we do a whole... I mean, I think the issue is so important, it almost warrants...
Why don't you do a separate
its own, and also
you talk about more than one building, and the fact that you're doing one. What about the one? You said I just found out about the bathroom.
The 4-H is going to be cross-land.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm just wondering
you
if
you want to do something that like kind do. Of sets that up as a separate.
I'm not.
I don't know.
Sure.
Paul has something.
Paul.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was trying in a matter of just process and trying to expedite the resolution and get things done. I was at the position last week of saying, you know, less is more. I think that was Sonia's phrase. But frankly, I think we need to talk about the why, more about the how. So there's a how and a why. So I want to get back to the why, because I think that's the biggest issue. If you're talking about selling, then enhance the why. What's not here in the why that I think would resonate with people is, and it kind of, we, it's code, I won't say it's code, but for some, we understand it, maybe others don't, but early releases. People that should be incarcerated are essentially out on the street, or cases are being dropped due to this, the system can't handle it. If there is some expansion of that issue, I think that's what will compel people to support it. The voters.
But aren't our early releases because of not space in the jail?
It's all of it.
And not, I don't know.
But people are in jail longer.
Trial delays.
Yeah, exactly.
Sonia, some of it's trial delays.
Trial delays because they can't process
So I also share that we do have a website, and we can, I hear what you're saying about the community benefits side of it that goes into a lot of those hows. And that's another place that we can message things, and we can do it through social media with blasts and stuff like that as well. So we have a lot of tools in our toolkit here. But we do probably, I would like us to get to a place where we can get a resolution before you for a discussion item on an upcoming business agenda. So.
Yeah, because we need it for legislature, like fast, right?
When we have a statement you approve, so we're using
so that's
that.
Good.
Yes.
So it'd be nice to have a resolution.
I say let's just go with this. Let's work on another separate CLT one.
I think it's so important, Ken, what you're doing.
I like that idea.
And I really want to get behind that in a bigger way so that we set a standard. We, as a government, have so much ability to do good through what we build.
I'll just make one last pitch, and that is remember that all the way up to the governor's office, cross-laminated timber, and LEED certification and environmental sustainability are issues that go all the way to the governor's office through the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an opportunity to remind them. This is one of the discussions I've had with our staff over messaging is when you're talking about cross-laminated timber, just using that one as an example, you use the language of sustainability over and over and over. And every chance you get to put that language in whatever it is you're doing, it keeps it in the forefront, and it reminds the constituent groups that we are dealing with, i.e., in this case, the environmental community, that you're still on target with that. If you leave that out, it has a tendency to get to the bottom of the pile instead of staying at the top of the pile in terms of being in the forefront of people's minds. So my personal opinion is we're messaging something to a large different group of constituents, and I think we should include it. But obviously, I live and die by the vote, so I'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. I always try to put my doorstep glasses on. When you're on people, what resonates with the voters? We're talking about an initiative that we need the voter support on. So I think the whys. I think at the doorstep, public safety is a big
huge
factor.
Mm-hmm.
People want to feel
safe.
Well,
I'm not asking you to take it out.
I think it can be expanded on. So if you're going to modify it, let's put more public safety realities in it and sell it to the voters. Because on the doorstep, CLT doesn't resonate with people. Sustainability does not resonate at the doorstep. I'm not saying it's wrong.
I would disagree with you on that. But
I would too. And I support putting it in, but I can count too. All right, should we move on?
Yep. Can you poll specifically?
Sure. So is all those in favor of adding this to the resolution, say aye.
Aye.
I'll go with it. Well, okay. It's okay. One more thing. I mean, I'm okay. I'm not gonna
there you go.
Lose sleep over that.
Okay.
I would do a bigger one, but that's okay.
We can do more resolutions.
Well, use the website. Yeah. Anyone has any ideas they want to add to the website? Mm-hmm. I think the
can you incorporate a community benefits then?
Yeah.
Agreements.
Jail overcrowding, early releases. That is going to sell people.
See, this is where it gets.
Well,
tough.
Why don't we add this early releases too? Then, if it's going to be a resolution, just I put it all on there. Then
I was just trying last week and this morning, just trying to get the thing on the deal without keep on tweaking.
That's where I was at with what.
So I would keep it simple.
Taking Gary's recommendation of keeping it simple.
What are we?
That's.
I know.
They are overcomplicated, but I like.
Keep on going.
But I love the same thing.
It's okay.
And people don't really care about these things anyway. That's. The other thing, what we need is that statement for the legislature.
All right.
So can I guess come up with incorporate?
So what are we doing?
Releases and community benefit agreements.
What's a community benefit agreement?
It's just in the.
That's a term I hadn't heard.
Multnomah County did it in their construction of their courthouse. It's so that you encourage minority-owned contractors. You just have the project benefit the community in the way that it's constructed. And bid.
We do that. Do we do minority contracting?
We don't have we do. Yes.
It's a part of public contracting.
It's a part of public contracting. We don't have a huge initiative for it. Going with cross-laminated timbers would restrict us a little bit in that. But some of the subcontractors. But I think that there's a way to make it work. I mean, we're going to be working with the U of O and. You know, making a pipeline for students to be able to do this work. So there's some things we can do with that.
All right, let's move on.
Okay.
So I've asked to do that, not on this topic, but the one for early childhood. Remember I got one from NACO I showed you guys?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we all approved it.
Okay, mm-hmm. So we just have to get that.
Get that on the scene.
Yeah.
And all it needs was that was a really nice...
It's fine.
Resolution.
I mean,
just needed our county.
And I'm looking
no,
at
I don't
line.
Think it needs some words.
Okay.
Just clarify what you're asking for the courthouse resolution. Yes. So we're adding in the CLT line for sure. Mm-hmm. Are you asking for more in addition, or are we...
To incorporate forced release, you know, public safety and benefits agreements.
I would say the public... I'm okay with that, too. I know it's...
Reducing force... No,
well, you could do that in that one whereas... This one, whereas the courthouse cramped area resulting overcrowding.
In early releases.
Close quarters, intermingling of victims. I mean, you could just add that word, early releases.
Yep.
Jail early releases.
I'm just curious about that intersection because I know that our, and maybe Jen, you can answer this for me, as how the cramped courthouse results in early releases. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, looks a lot like
trial.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
It's trial delays that people get out before they can go to trial, and then we have a lot of failures to appear.
But so you almost need to realize that every day the jail probably makes a decision on who they're going to release because it's they have a fixed amount of beds, right? So they got to release people. So if people are in jail waiting to go to court, and there's delays because the courthouse can't process them.
Then they let them out.
Okay. Because they're not.
I get the intersection now.
No. Well, I spoke to that issue at our last meeting. They have reduced failure to appear and rearrests down from 65% and 66% down to 28% and 6% as a result of a pre-release program and pre-screening program that they're doing at the jail.
Yeah, right.
It's a form of probation, if you want to call it that, and it's dramatically reduced the failure to appear and the rearrest rates.
Yeah.
We're in the weeds. So that's so far is showing itself to be an effective program.
Right.
So but did you get it?
I think.
Yes. Do you want to see it again, or can we go right to a business?
Go right to
it.
Yeah, okay. But we'll see
send
it.
Send us a copy.
Yeah, you can send us a copy.
All right.
Okay.
Next.
All right. Business meeting this week is going to be fun. We have a presentation on waste reduction in local schools through milk dispensers. And we also have the first public hearing on the vehicle registration fee. On the consent agenda, I don't see anything that jumped out at me. A lot of contractual stuff as usual.
There's an error in the weekly agenda, Laurel.
This is the C4. I was just.
There is no Wednesday meeting.
Okay.
Wednesday 7:30 morning meeting.
I've been texting Emily back and forth because of that.
You mean tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah, there is no Metro subcommittee meeting.
Okay.
It's the third Wednesday of the month, right?
Yeah, it's the 20th.
Okay.
20th.
Thank you.
That's what I was asking.
We get that corrected on the website.
Yep. We'll get that corrected. And next, Dan, could you come up, please? You've got two items here, performance class in this annual report format and parking requirements in station community mixed-use districts.
If I can, I'll flip the order, talk about the parking first.
Did you have materials for this that was sent to us?
No.
No.
No?
No.
Okay, good. Okay, because I don't see it.
Hopefully it's fairly simple. This relates to an affordable housing issue. There's a proposal for a 100-unit affordable housing project in the Fuller Road Station area, which is zoned station community mixed use. If you've seen it, there's a giant TriMet parking lot that they built when they built that station never been full.
On a Geller.
It is on a Geller's project. 100-unit project would be required under the current code to have 156 parking spaces. Obviously, the more parking you in place, the fewer units you can build in the same space. So what we're talking about and proposing is under the emergency declaration, obviously the solution to homelessness is units, that you authorize the planning director to modify parking standards in the station community mixed use district, which again is only Fuller Road, it wouldn't apply anywhere else, based on evidence that the occupants of specific categories of units of affordable housing will own less than one vehicle per unit. There are studies to that effect, and proximity to light rail transit. The potential to do an ordinance amendment would run them out of their time frame. Obviously, it wouldn't mean the property would go away, or you couldn't put another deal together, but it would put this deal off the table. TriMet is hesitant to sell the property unless they believe there can be enough affordable units built on it, so TriMet's strongly in favor of this as well. But rather than get into the weeds of how many parking spaces specifically, whether they apply to what level of units, we thought let's just delegate that to the planning director.
Yeah, I'm good with that, Paul.
Yeah.
Yep. That's good.
Can I expand on that for just 1 second? Couple things. We don't like using the emergency ordinance. I'll be open, honest, and transparent about that. We are assessing the opportunities through a text amendment through our code to possibly add some flexibility. We have done interpretations on three prior projects for this individual based on data. Unfortunately, that section of our code has been removed. It got removed as a part of our bookkeeping and add some flexibility in there. We're looking to add it back through an amendment. So this isn't untested waters. We have actually had discussions with this individual about a reduced, it was basically a 0.70, I think, was what we went to, 0.70 parking ratio. The reason we do this is because this particular individual provides us information about how they work with their tenants. They talk about the cost of vehicle ownership. They talk about the impacts. You know, as most of us look, it's like 30% of their income for a lot of these folks. They try to divert them away from that vehicle ownership. That's why they locate a lot of their facilities by TriMet lines, by transit lines, etc. If this was something new, and I like, you know, this ordinance allows us the ability to enter a discussion about altering our parking standards. Know that we're coming forward to the board probably with an amendment to our parking standards anyway, here in the upcoming code session. It'll be a part of the package you'll be discussing.
In this particular circumstance, I always want to clarify it, I have less concern, but I think this is a slippery slope.
I don't disagree with that.
Okay. There's too many areas, especially in southeast Portland right now, where that is working out very badly.
Correct.
Okay.
You don't have to go very far north of this particular side to find that.
So I don't know what's coming up the pike for our parking standards as far as that relief. I know what's in place today. And I have concerns about that, but I want to make sure that we have somewhat of a record of why we allowed this, and that there is a parking agreement or some kind of language we can point to and say, under this particular circumstance, with available parking nearby, we've done this. But I don't.
Available transit.
It's got to be. Well, not just transit, but parking.
Exactly. And so the discussions we've had with her to date, we were actually looking to take a different route. We were looking to take an interpretation route. And with that interpretation route, have a discussion around them actually prohibiting some parking for some of the units. That's something that isn't way addressed in our code. I mean, there are a lot of options that are out there. I will tell you that we haven't had a parking issue on the three other unit projects that we've done this for. We have not had a problem. Also, the way this is written, it's limited. It's just that particular area, just that Fuller Road station area that they're looking at currently, which was a concern that we equally shared, which is if you do carte blanche and just goes across the entire county, that can open up Pandora's box. You don't know who might apply for it, what their history, what their ability to pull it off might be.
So hypothetically, just explain this to me so I understand the mechanics. Hypothetically, there's more residents with cars in this future facility than there is parking on their particular property. Will TriMet, in their TriMet parking lot, allow parking? And is that an agreement that can be reached?
I think it's actually reverse on that. Okay. There's evidence that suggests these individuals that occupy these residential units have fewer cars.
I understand that. Get back to my question specifically. Will there be some kind of allowance that if all that housing is occupied or all the parking spaces are utilized for this new housing structure, okay, that there will that any overflow will be allowed on the TriMet parking?
Probably not.
No. Why not?
Well, that's a private negotiation between this individual and TriMet. Yeah. And so I can't affirm to you that they'll have the ability to do that. I can't affirm to you. I mean, it's our job, I think, to provide a legal, logical argument and reason to why this adjustment to our parking standard is viable. Because the intent is to make sure, this is not the city of Portland, you do not have to park that facility. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about just a reduction in the number.
Okay, I'll tell you where I'm coming from. And this is what kind of just frosts me a little bit. And that is that a lot of people just simply don't like seeing parking lots full of cars, whether they're car lots or whether they're parking lots full of cars. Mm-hmm. And what do we have at the Park Avenue station area right now? We have the Elks Lodge parking lot, which is completely plastered right now. It's a snowy day, so maybe not. But on a typical day, that is covered with people that are riding light rail, plus the parking structure, plus the neighborhoods. It is nothing but complaints.
Agreed.
But what's this got to do with this issue?
It's a principle about parking that I really want. There ought to be, if it goes one way, it ought to go both ways. The door swings both ways. There needs to be some real accommodation for parking cars.
Among the options and among the parking standards that I think could be modified would be the amount of shared parking that could count. Right? There's a potential reduction for shared parking. And the idea was simply they need to come with evidence that the planning director can use. It may be shared parking, it may be income, but it's got to be evidence-based. And you're right, this is a very different, it's a sea of empty, it's a giant empty parking lot, it has been since it was built. And that's the kind of evidence that we hope. Also, I want to say that the Housing Task Force will be recommending that the county look at those parking standards in a holistic fashion in the next work plan, which is where all those issues will get worked out.
Wouldn't it be more efficient to build parking structures?
What was your budget?
Well,
yeah. It's expensive, but yes, it would be land efficient.
Laminated too.
So how many units? Know. How many units are going to build there?
100. Like
100. That makes the math very easy. So could they not say 70 of these units have a parking space that goes with them? 30 do not. Period. So the 70. Get a parking space, and the other 30 are rented to people, without question, who agree they're not going to have a car. You solve the problem.
No. So okay. If you okay. fit okay. to the
our standards right now have 3-bedroom, 2-bedroom, 1-bedroom units that it's called out, and they do a 1.7, 1.75 to whatever it might be based on the number of units. There are a discussion around market rate units associated with this project as well. All the market rate flat out. You park it per our code, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The question, though, is how do you, from a programmatic perspective, not either allow or do you not rent to people or provide housing to people who predominantly don't have a car? And that's the discussions we've had with her in the past. I even said, you know, hey, how about you restrict it as a part of your rental agreement? You know what? We'll rent some of these out because it's your responsibility to make sure that parking standards work. They are talking about shared agreements with TriMet, shared spaces.
Well,
it's, there's a 20% reduction for that. In this zone, there is on-street parking that's allowed as well. There's a lot of street system that needs to be built in there. They get to count that. So there are a lot of parking alternatives that are around there. I just can't get to the specificity that you're looking for because, yeah, the Park Avenue especially has a lot. There's a lot of discussion around
this. This is a site-specific.
Yeah. I'm good.
Yes, let's go.
Yeah, there's a public safety element of this. We were in Southeast Portland. There are so many cars parked because there's no room. Mm-hmm. People that are handicapped can't be seen because the cars can't see them. So there's people that are darting out between parked cars.
We agree.
It's
and that's the and I agree because that's a lot of that area just directly north of this side, the Lentz area. I mean, they just waived the parking requirement.
Oh, yes,
and that's not what we're talking about. No, I want to make sure we're very clear about that.
All right.
Okay. All right. Performance Plaquemines report format.
Quick question for the commission. You recall that we've done since we did Performance Plaquemines, we come back to you with an annual report. We've done it a few different ways. When we started out, we would do several sessions kind of around each area of focus where departments, the multiple departments involved in each area of focus would come in and talk about how we're doing on the goals and how they're working together to move the needle. Last year, we didn't do that. We worked through all of those measures at the retreat. So the question is, how would the board like to do that this year? What we're thinking about is maybe two sessions, an hour and a half, two areas of focus in each session. We bring the departments in that are working on safe, healthy, and secure communities. We just talk about what they're doing. There are things that get missed when we talk about housing. Well, the work that ETD did around the ADUs, how juvenile and community corrections are working together to reduce recidivism. Those kinds of things. They were well received the first few years that we did them.
Well, if you don't require reporting, people do what you require them to report on, basically. So I would say, yeah, we should probably have that process. Like, in which way, Martha? Pick a direction.
Okay. Sorry, I'm fidgeting.
Anyway, I think we should get reports from people what they're doing, how it dovetails with our managing for results program. And it gives them a chance to brag a little, quite frankly, brag a little bit about what they're doing.
How much time, how time consuming is that, though? I'm just kind of like...
I don't know.
Is this changing the format that we've used, like, last year?
Well...
It's the format that we used, I think, the first 3 years. And each year we shortened it because there was more familiarity on the commission with what was happening and less time needed to explain what was going on. Mm-hmm. We think we could do it easily in two 90-minute sessions, depending on how much the commission wants to engage. I mean, that's always the
let's try it.
The factor.
Let's try it. And we'll decide what to do next year.
And we do have a robust webpage now that has results on almost all the commissions.
Will that happen after the budget cycle or before the budget cycle?
Before.
Well, I'm kind of worried about our time before because that's cramped, and I don't want it to turn into opportunity for advocacy for budget enhancements.
Okay.
Well,
so I prefer it to happen after the budget cycle. We have more time after the budget cycle. We have a very compressed, it's usually very compressed before the budget cycle. That's my worry.
So, we can wait, and we can just do it next year.
Well, what's wrong with the summer or this fall?
Yeah.
I'm not saying...
Next fiscal year, I meant.
Fiscal year.
Yeah,
next fiscal year. Let's do that.
So shortly after the budget's approved and after July 1st.
Yeah. I mean, the ideal cycle, right, what we tried to kick off initially was you do it in December, January, right? Because you talk about, you kind of make that presentation at budget time, May and June, and then the off, you know, 6 months later, you have more of an update on how you've been doing. But the time never...
You think if we don't,
with holidays, it just never falls that way.
I think if we don't actually set aside time to hear what people are doing in terms of this program that we have said we want you to do, that the signal that you send is that you're no longer interested in whether or not they do it. So
And I don't want to send that signal because I think we are making progress in a lot of areas through this process. So,
okay.
But I'm good with after July 1st,
okay.
As soon as possible, speaking for myself.
Okay. We'll do. Okay. Thank
Sounds
you.
Good. We have three other items that I want to make sure you have time to talk about, but we have also got a half an hour policy session about surplus prohibition.